Six Nations litigation team announced back on July 29th that the community's litigation case surrounding the Haldimand Tract, which was originally brought forward in 1995, will now proceed to trial next October 5th in 2026. So here to speak on the case being granted a trial start date is the director of Six Nations Lands and Resources, Lonnie Bomberry. So thank you very much for doing this today, Lonnie.
You're welcome.
And so this case has been a long-standing one within the community, and now that the trial has been granted a start date for next October, what does reaching this stage mean for the Six Nations community?
Well, it means that now we have a target date that we can finally present our side, the litigation side, our claim, what it's all about, and present that to the trial judge. And really, to the whole community and anyone else who wants to learn what the case is all about. So not only is it a chance for us to seek what's rightful damage that are owing to us for the unlawful act of the Crown back in the 1800s, but also I think it's a great opportunity for people to become educated on our history to a great degree, because we'll be covering a lot of Six Nations history, not only prior to us coming to the Grand River in 1784, but also prior to that. So it is a really a good historical account of the Six Nations, not only here in Canada, but also in the United States.
And can you kind of explain what kind of compensation or settlement that Six Nations is seeking through the case?
Yes, well, the claim is one for monetary damages at this point, because I think I might have explained before in talking about this that it would be practically impossible to get the land back suing all the individual owners who are millions and millions of owners of land in the Haldimand Tract. So, but the egregious wrongs that were committed in the taking of our lands and any monies that were obtained from the sale of those lands were committed by the Crown. That begs the question as well. If there was misadventure by the Crown or fraud, which we're certainly alleging is fraud, what is the effect of that on the land? You know, I always, in my own mind, I think, okay, it doesn't matter who it is. If you commit fraud in taking somebody's property, you shouldn't be allowed to benefit from that. And the question then becomes, if all the lands and monies were fraudulently taken from us, which we are certainly claiming and set to prove, then what is the effect of that on a land? That have we ever really truly surrendered our interest in these lands? And that's been an interesting question that hopefully will come out from this court decision, because, it's my position and the position of a lot of people that we still should be enjoying, in spite of the fact that it's no longer, lands are no longer in our possession, we still should be enjoying the benefits of those lands. And so that's to be determined down the road, but certainly this court case will go a long way towards that, sort of answering that question.
And so now that the trial date is set, what are the next steps for the litigation team and yourself that need to be taken between now and next October?
It's just preparation, really. It's, the Crowns, both Canada and Ontario, particularly Canada, is going to be coming up with all of these arguments against our case, all these so-called experts that they might have saying, no, your case isn't what you're saying, and we're prepared to prove otherwise. So it's preparing to respond to those kind of challenges and preparing our witnesses who are going to be giving evidence, to present the case in a most truthful light so it can be shown that, that the case has a lot of merit. These lands were unlawfully taken from the Six Nations, and there needs to be justice in the actions of the Crown in taking our lands. And you have to admit that all the losses occurred in the 1800s for the most part, in the early first half of the 1800s. And the loss of those lands, which is almost nearly a million acres, occurred as a result of what we're alleging the fraudulent actions of the Crown officials, which was the government of Upper Canada at that time, who were ruled by an elite group of people chosen by Lieutenant Governor of Upper Canada, the Executive Council, which my information reveals only consisted of about five people. But these people were powerful people and ran the government. They weren't elected representatives, but they were the ones who were responsible for taking the land. selling the land. Not all of it was sold. Well, all of it was sold, but a lot of it was illegally taken, and there was no surrenders for those lands. So they, in saying that, we're looking at, okay, what are the damages for those actions, and what are we looking for retribution to right that those wrongs that were done? So we've never put a price tag on a court case, because at this point it's impossible to quantify, you know, just what the damages are, because these wrongs occurred in the early part of the 1800s and, you know, the early part of the 19th century. And if you start looking at, you know, if you can put a figure on a damages figure for a certain loss of a parcel or big parcels of land, and you start quantifying those damages, and then you start adding compound interests or equitable interests since that time, which is, you know, almost 200 years, and you're looking at sizable damages. And so we can't really, at this point, quantify those damages. We know they're worth a lot. And at this point, it's a process for us to prove those damages. I mean, to prove the wrongs and to leave it to the trial with our representations to determine what those damages are. So it is as I mentioned before, I think I told you that the trial has been bifurcated, which means it's split into two. The first issue is the Crown liable for the claims, which we say they are? And the second part of the trial is, well, if they are liable, what are the damages that must be paid? So we're anticipating that at this point, you know, with the amount of witnesses that are lined up on our side and on the sides of both the Crown, Ontario, Canada and Ontario, that, you know, the trial conceivably could take, on that first part of the first phase of it, could conceivably take a year to resolve. So, and we're hoping that if it has to go that route, then it will be telecast so that the community can watch the trial at home. Or at specific locations within the reserve where we'll be telecast. So hopefully that's one of the things we want to do is to show the people exactly what happens in this trial and what is being presented and what are the representations being made. So it is really it will really be a groundbreaking case and also a case in which, you know, what are the damages, and how do you quantify them, and what are they going to be? And how are they going to be proven? And it's really interesting, in that regard. So it is. It's not. But as I said, it could conceivably take a while for this for the trial to work itself out. So, you know, it could conceivably, you know, take 5-6 years before it's finally comes to an end. But because I said there's so much evidence. And there's so much interpretation of that evidence that it's going to take a while to do that. And fortunately, the early part of this year, we've now determined that we're going to have a trial judge appointed in the first part of 2026. So that should help move the case along, because any judge who would be sitting on this court case doesn't want to be bound up for that amount of time. And, you know, usually judges, my experience is before the trials, that they're encouraging the parties to sit down and talk about resolving this without the need to go through a long, complicated and detailed trial. So hopefully that will be one of the things that we could start once the trial judge is appointed.
And then, so in saying that, is there constant communication between the litigation team and the Crown representing Ontario and Canada about talking about settling this before it hits a courtroom?
Not at this point. There's no talk about settling it. We're just talking about the evidence and what's to be presented and agreeing on what evidence can go in uncontested into a joint book of documents. So we did have a pretrial in this case in December 13th in Toronto, before a justice of the Supreme Court. I can't remember his name right now, but at that time he was strongly encouraging parties to talk settlement on this. And Canada and Ontario said, unless we know how much Six Nations is claiming, then we can't really talk settlement at this point. So that's the position that the Crown has put in. They don't know how much we're claiming. They know it's going to be worth a lot. And at this point, in my opinion, it's only my opinion, I think their best strategy is just to delay and not talk settlement. And hopefully something will work out down the road. So at this point, there is no discussions on resolving any of the issues in the trial.
And working throughout this case, the litigation team has been working with Blake Castles in Graydon Law and then JFK Law.
Yes.
Can you talk about what role they'll play in the trial? And then, you know, maybe what's the confidence level heading into that?
Okay. Both the lawyers from two law firms are working well together. And so their job is to make representations on behalf of Six Nations. So they're going to be presenting the evidence that in the order that the evidence will be called. They're going to be asking the questions of our witnesses. And although they can't ask leading questions, can't lead the witnesses in that regard, they have to let the evidence come out through our witnesses without suggesting what the answer should be. So they're going to be, that's their function, getting all of our evidence out. And the second part of that is once our witnesses are on the stand, then it is the job of Canada and Ontario to cross-examine them and try to trip them up in some way or to cast doubt on their testimony. So that's the way generally how trials run. So I don't expect any different mode in this trial. It'll go that way. We'll present our witnesses. They get to cross-examine them. Once all our witnesses are done, then it becomes the Crown's turn to present their evidence. They get to present their evidence and examination chief, and we get to cross-examine their witnesses. So although it sounds simple, because of these, we're talking a time period of about almost 100 years of what events that occurred, that it's going to be a lengthy process just to get this evidence out. So it's not going to be something that's going to happen in a week or a couple of weeks. It is going to be a long time just for the first part of the trial.
And then, so getting into the trial presenting all the facts and the arguments on behalf of Six Nations, do you know what a successful outcome would look like for Six Nations?
Well, we're anticipating that we're going to be asking for a huge amount of damages, although we can't quantify that. But, you know, my own personal opinion, obviously, it's in the billions of dollars. So that's a successful outcome if the court says, yes, indeed, Six Nations, you were wronged in the loss of your lands and your money. You deserve to have justice for that. You're deserving of damages for what the wrongs that were committed against you. And here's the amount that I, the trial judge, determines that amount to be. So it is, in my opinion, it's going to be a substantial amount of money, as I said, in the billions of dollars. But that's only my opinion. But I think it's worth that because we're talking about losses of huge tracts of land that occurred over a significant period of time, and any money that was obtained in the sale of those lands, the Crown misappropriated all the money, and so Six Nations didn't even get to enjoy it. So, you know, it's a total breach of trust by the Crown, a breach of their fiduciary duty. So in my opinion, it's going to attract a very significant amount of damages, and that's the outcome I foresee and I'm hoping for. But I also indicated, too, that I'd like to see an opinion. Maybe it'll come from the court, from the trial, about, you know, whether we still have an interest in these lands or not. And it's my opinion that I'm hoping that will be, maybe the judge won't directly say that, but at least it might come out in his otherwise the reasons for his opinion and awarding and finding the Crown's liable and saying that damages should be paid.
And so if the courts should rule in favor of Six Nations in this case, can you explain what the process will be in terms of how the compensation is spread within the community?
We haven't got to that point yet. We're setting up a body that will determine that. And what I say, I don't want to say that it's going to be months down the road, because it needs to be started right away. So we're going to be setting that, figuring out how that's going to be done in conjunction with the lawyers, of course, who have some experience in this regard. So, you know, we have. I don't want to see it being the way that the Robinson-Huron treaty case happened, where a significant amount of those damages were paid to individuals. Everybody got a certain amount of share. But that's a whole different case from ours. Ours is about lands and monies that were basically stolen from us, whereas their case, the Robinson-Huron case and the Robinson-Superior case, is about treaty monies that should have been paid at a certain level but were not. It has nothing to do with the land. It's just that the Crown breached its obligation in increasing the treaty monies paid to individuals, which in a sense, is to individuals rather than to the bigger body, the bands. So ours is a lot different. Ours is for the injuries that were committed or suffered by the band, the whole band in particular. And there could be some payments to individuals, and I fully expect that those people who are in need of financial assistance, you know. I have to admit, though, on Six Nations, there are, because we're a progressive reserve, progressive community, a lot of people live well and really do not need any assistance in that way. But there are other things that could be done with the money. We could buy a lot of the Haldeman Track land back and make it part of our territory. We could increase the level of services that's available to the community. More houses, more money would be available for people to build houses. The wastewater and the water systems could be put throughout the territory. And so all of these things that are community benefits that could be achieved as a result was going to be looked into. And it's more, in my sense, my opinion, that how does the overall community benefit generations down the road.
Do you see the community being involved in the decision-making process at all, or will it be down to the group of people set up for the litigation team?
No, I anticipate that we're going to be setting up a committee or a body to decide that, and it's going to be consisting of community members as well as some members from the Six Nations Council. My opinion, it should be the members of the community who make a decision in this regard, rather than just one body of the politics.
And just lastly, as someone who's been working on this case for years, what keeps you motivated through such a long process?
Justice. I want to see justice. When you look at the whole factual background of how the lands and money were lost, it really makes you angry. It really makes you sad. And you said this should never happen, especially, considering the fact that, the Six Nations came to this part of North America as a result of being faithful allies of the British Crown. And they were rewarded by being granted the land along the Grand River from its source to its mouth that they were to enjoy forever. And that fact of that was defeated by greed and the greed of the white man to take the Indians' land. And so, which is common throughout the history of North America, both in Canada and the United States, is no different than what happened here. And, that should have never been allowed to happen. And when we get justice on that, we can't get all the land back like we were promised, but at least we can get some satisfaction into it. We can get some of it back, plus we can get monetary benefits to improve our community. So that's what keeps me going, seeing justice done at last.
All right, Lonnie, thank you very much for doing this and talking on this. And I'm sure as we move closer, we're going to get another update from you. So best of luck with everything that's going to be happening within the next year from now.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
I'm Andrew Dow, and this news story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, which supports the creation of original civic news.